everyone, and welcome to Cellular Healing TV. I'm your host, Meredith Dykstra, and this is episode number 193. We have our resident cellular healing specialist, Dr. Daniel Pompa, on the line. And today we welcome very special guest, Mike Salguero. And Mike is going to be delving into a topic today that is very important to all of us who are fans of good meat. And he's the CEO of ButcherBox, which is a really incredible company that's offering some really amazing healthy animal products to all of us. So we're going to talk about this a little bit more, the ins and outs of what it means to have grass-fed beef and organic and natural and all these terms and even the history behind, you know, why the meat that we have today is as it is. So before we start this interview, let me tell you a little bit about Mike and then we'll dig in. All right, Mike Salguero is the CEO and founder of ButcherBox, the first delivery service dedicated to providing 100% natural grass-fed beef, organic chicken, and heritage pork to consumers. The idea of ButcherBox came to Salguero when his wife was pregnant with their first child and they wanted to eat the healthiest meat possible, but had trouble finding 100% grass-fed beef. ButcherBox was launched in September 2015 and today delivers natural organic meats directly to consumers' doors nationwide through a simple monthly subscription service. All ButcherBox products are humanely raised and free of antibiotics, hormones, and GMOs. The mission of the company is to make natural organic meats available to everyone. So, Mike, we're so excited to have you on Cellular Healing TV. This is a really important topic to us and to a lot of our listeners and viewers out there. So let's dig in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I told the story that I was having dinner last night. We had this amazing chicken. And all of us, including my children, were like, wow, this chicken is so good. And my wife said, where did we get this chicken? I said, it's funny you would ask, because tomorrow I'm interviewing the CEO of ButcherBox, and that's where we got the chicken. So thank you. I've had other meats that you have, and I can say right now, man, it's spectacular. So, but you know, I want a lot of our viewers, listeners, they hear me talk about never make an exception. I don't ever make an exception. It's grass-fed or nothing. I want to talk about some of the pitfalls of chicken because, you know, that's one of the most toxic foods on the planet. But let's start with the grass-fed thing, right? You wanted grass-fed for your wife. That's part of your story. You might want to elaborate there.
Yep.
Why, Mike? What, I want our viewers to understand this distinction right now between grass-fed and grade, and maybe it's even getting into the history as well.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, my story is, my wife has a thyroid condition. It's an autoimmune disorder. So we were looking at ways to help manage that. And, she did a bunch of elimination diets and Whole30 and stuff like that to start eating better. And in virtually every single one of those, diets, they say eat grass-fed beef, eat pasture-raised meats.
Sure.
So we started looking for it, and lo and behold, it was really hard to find. We went to a local grocery store, wasn't there. I live in Boston, but finding grass-fed beef was not easy. So I ended up buying a cow share from a farmer in New York, so about a three-hour drive from here, who would bring over basically a trash bag full of meat, and I'd stuff it in my freezer, and that would be our meat. Did that for a few years, and in the process, really just realized this is, first of all, the meat is incredible. It's way healthier, but it's really just not a great experience for me to like have to go pick up a trash bag full of meat. This would be so much better if it was delivered directly to my door. So I started just over 2 years ago, and the idea was let's just get the best possible quality meat from great farms and get it to customers. We actually started with just beef, but it became pretty apparent pretty fast that people don't eat that much beef in a month. So then we moved into chicken and we moved into pork and just tried to round out what our offering was. To your question of why grass-fed, so there's definitely health benefits in terms of more vitamins, better fats, which customers like. There's definitely the environmental side. Grass field is a carbon sink. It helps with kind of the emissions that are associated with animals. The thing that when I talk to people and try to explain to them why grass-fed, the thing that's the most important from where I sit is, so every cow starts the same way. The first 6 months, it's a cow-calf, so it's a cow feeding off milk. The next year, every cow is just eating grass. And then it's really that last part. So if you're a corn-fed cow, after the year on grass and the 6 months with the mother, you would then go to a feedlot and spend 6 months on a diet of corn, grains, antibiotics, hormones. And the idea is to get you as fat as possible, as fast as possible amongst hundreds of thousands of other animals. It's what's called a concentrated feeding operation. And generally, given a diet of antibiotics and hormones, keep you healthy and also help you put on a ton of weight. Versus a grass-fed animal where they're just kind of left on the grass. So they're able to just live their life as nature intended. They're able to just keep eating grass. So it's not very hard to kind of mentally understand what, you know, first of all, why feeding something foreign to the animal is not necessarily good. Why putting on a bunch of fat that's just from carbohydrates is not necessarily good. Being in that type of environment around all these other cows, and all that stuff comes to you. So we're really big believers in animal welfare. We're really big believers in providing a great quality product to our customer. And it's just not there when you're buying something directly from a feedlot.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. But, you know, it's like, here's where I struggle, right? I don't make the exception because I've spent time reading about how these things bioaccumulate in the meat. The stuff that they're spraying on the grain, right? We talk about levels of chemicals on grain foods. But when the animal eats it, to make 1 pound of beef, how many acres of sprayed grain is it? I forget, but it's a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, meaning that it takes all that acreage of all the toxins being sprayed on those grains, you know, in that 1 pound of beef, not to mention the antibiotics, the hormones, the steroids, it's all in that meat. Yep. I've taken my time to educate myself there. I've educated myself on how when cows, you know, eat corn, it throws off these fatty acid ratios. It disrupts our cell membranes, which I can tell you this, if you don't fix somebody's cell membranes, you will never fix their hormone imbalance. You will never turn off their bad genes. You will never detoxify a cell. I mean, I can go on and on about the science, and I can tell you, eating grain-fed meat destabilizes that cell membrane. So those listening, if you don't desire, have time, the knowledge base to do the research, trust me, I've done it. You know, grain-fed meat is something that I don't make an exception on. You can ask my friends, my kids, my family, my wife. You know, I will not make that exception because I understand the science.
Yep.
So, you know, let's talk about this. When did this go bad? You know, meaning that in the old, cows always ate grass. I go to other countries, right. Their cows always eat grass because financially they can't afford to eat a grain.
Yep.
So why are we feeding a grain? When did it go bad?
1950s. So essentially in the 1950s, after World War II, there was a real scarcity mentality and also a, hey, let's add some industrialization to our food system. And that's where cows started going from just eating grass to large feedlot operations. From the perspective of let's feed our people, a feedlot's actually a pretty amazing, you know, able to take a input of corn and add weight onto a cow. Obviously, you know, I agree with you. I will never eat something corn fed, but the feedlot came around in the 50s and has grown and grown and grown ever since. So the stat right now is that 98% of the beef consumed in the United States is grain fed.
Yeah.
So, you know, the grass-fed industry that we work on is a very, very small subsection of a small subsection of the actual market. And that, you know, and that's, by the way, that's just on the beef side. So chicken and pork, there's a lot more grain in chicken and pork, and that's pretty much true for all chicken and pork. Unfortunately, there's not really many pastured options out there that are not eating grains, just for your, you know, your audience's information.
Right. I brought up negatives. Let me bring up positives of grass-fed, and you can add to it. You know, first of all, there's something that we, when a cow eats grass, called conjugated linoleic acid, that we need to actually burn fat in our cells to be a fat burner. So many people lack this conjugated linoleic acid, and it literally affects their cells' ability to use fat as an energy source. So we know that people have weight loss resistance because of this, weight loss resistance. You know, cows eat grass, take something called K1 and transform it into something called K2 that we need for strong bones, that we need for to utilize calcium, magnesium, correct? You know, so even our muscles to contract normally, our heart to beat normally. You know, so we look at, we've heard a lot about vitamin D. We've heard a lot about calcium, but we hear a little about K2. And I can tell you, there's only a handful of vitamin deficiencies. Vitamin K2 is one of them. And the reason why is because humans today are eating grass-fed nothing. We don't have the ability to eat grass or, you know, or vegetables. There's a couple vegetables that Americans aren't eating that will have actual K2. But the only way to get it is via these grass-fed animals, whether you're ingesting their dairy, cheese, you know, butter from 100% grass-fed cows, or the meat. You want to add anything to that? Because people listening to this have to understand, yes, there's the negative, but you're missing some key things that we are depleted in today because we're eating grass-fed nothing.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good explanation. And you clearly know this topic in terms of nutrition way better than I do here. But I think there are a lot of benefits. I mean, first of all, it's a superior tasting product. So I think one thing I tend to hear is, oh, I tried grass-fed years ago. It was really tough. I couldn't eat it. And what that tends to be is somebody tried what was called grass-fed, but was actually probably a dairy cow. So that's how the industry used to work. It would be like, oh, people want grass fed. Let's just feed them a dairy cow. That's been, you know, being pumped for dairy for years and years and years. And then it's being used. So, I mean, first of all, I think the taste is way better. Secondly, aside from, you know, all the health benefits, my body just feels way cleaner. So it doesn't sit in your stomach. It's a better meal. So for those that are choosing to eat beef and for those that are choosing to eat meat, I think, grass-fed, you have to do it if you want to be able to live the healthy life that you want.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I think it's one of those things that nobody should make exceptions with, because that's how important this topic is. And I agree. It's hard to get for some people.
Yep.
That has been part of your niche, right?
I mean, that's people, right. That's our mission.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in these areas, you know, they order it, but tell me your standard. You know, what is your standard? You have different suppliers, you have different, you know, farmers. What's your standard as far as, look, we make no exception here. This is why our meat's the best.
Yeah. So, first of all, on your first point, so our mission is, and what gets us up and keeps us going, is that grass-fed beef everywhere. So this notion that at any table, anywhere in the U.S., and then hopefully abroad someday, we could serve grass-fed beef and people would, you know, love what they've received and et cetera. So we ship everywhere in the country, and that's hard to do, but it's something that's been fun to build from the ground up. So we have some pretty ironclad standards. So first of all, there's the standards of antibiotic and hormone free. So we're never ever, which means any animal that is in our program has never ever been given an antibiotic or a hormone. Sometimes companies say that, but they don't really mean it. Like, they could be fed an antibiotic early, or they could be fed an antibiotic if they got sick, but then that they're still in the program. For us, it's a never ever. So never an antibiotic, never a hormone. And we're not cruel. The farmers aren't cruel to animals. So what they do is, if an animal gets sick, they'll give them an antibiotic. They just will pull them from the program and they'll go sell it somewhere else. Mm-hmm. We're humanely raised, everything. So there are humane certifications that you can get. Humanely Raised is one of them, or Certified Humane, where they go in and they check all the practices from that animal being born all the way until when it's slaughtered, making sure that the animal is treated with the utmost of respect, which is incredibly important to me. I mean, there is not a lot of research on the health benefits of an animal that has lived a life of humane and respected, but I personally, if I'm going to eat eat meat, I think that's incredibly important and something I definitely wanted to bring throughout our company. And then it kind of breaks down depending on the product. So all of our cows, so 100% grass fed, which means it's eaten a diet of grass its entire life. Unfortunately, in the United States, the definition of 100% grass-fed has actually started to get changed.
It has.
So it doesn't necessarily always mean that it was just fed grass. So we have also then moved to pasture-raised as well on the beef side. So we are working with a few people in Oklahoma, and then we've actually been purchasing a bunch of meat from Australia, because Australia is like, there's 26 million people in the entire country or continent. It's the size of, it's almost the size of the US. So there's just tons and tons and tons of land, and they grow an amazing product there. So that's, and so a pasture raised product is like basically always out on the fields, never inside. There's shelter in the event of like a tough winter or tough summer, but usually it's like under a tree and not necessarily in a barn.
So you're trying to coin a new term, pasture raised, as opposed, because grass fed's been bottled down or watered down. What about grass finished? That's kind of what I use. I see it as a grass finished.
Yeah. So, I hate to further confuse the conversation, because I think grass fed, grass finished, and all this has been, completely, lo and behold, food companies are changing labels to kind of confuse you and have you not understand what you're actually getting. But some companies will say grass-fed, grain-finished, and that's the same as like every other cow that you can get, right?
So right.
Then there's grass-fed, grass-finished, which is essentially the same thing as 100% grass-fed. Yeah. The challenge is the definition of grass has changed. So the short story is the USDA, this makes sense, but if you're a farmer in Vermont, there are months out of the year where your cow cannot be out eating grass because there's 3 feet of snow on the ground and it's just can't eat grass. So what they do is they bring them into a barn and they feed them hay, also known as forage. And what's happened in the industry is the definition of forage has been broadened to include things like, for example, corn husks, and that can still be considered grass-fed.
Oh my God.
Because learn something new.
Fermented hay, a lot of farmers in, back where I used to live in Pittsburgh, he was 100% grass-fed. He would ferment his hay and, it was really good. Now, he wasn't doing that because I don't want a corn husk that's corn, obviously it's going to be GMO because that's 99% of the corn is. So. Right. Now that creates a new problem.
Correct. So that's, it's one of the reasons why we stand as a brand and why I think this brand is really interesting. And we have a lot of room for growth and improvement and whatnot is because there's just so much misinformation out there. It's just really hard for anyone to purchase something that they believe in. And that's where we come in. And, I talk about certainly here within the company, it's really important for me to be home for dinner with my family and to enjoy a great meal and serve great food. And our ability to bring that to customers, and we understand how important meals are and the ability to just like let people serve something that they're happy with and proud of and know is safe is just super important. So that's right where we play.
Let's talk about chicken because, I find it very, very difficult to find clean chicken. Joe Mercola is a friend of mine, and he will only buy from a source that 100% he knows you know, even these people claiming their chickens are organic or this or that, this can be problematic. Explain to our listeners, you know, this chicken issue of finding clean chicken, and then you can kind of piggyback on how you find clean chicken.
Yeah, chicken's an interesting one. I guess a few things. So organic chicken is, it's not necessarily, like there are a lot of different ways you can raise organically. Getting the certification is one thing, but then high humane standards and keeping those standards is really important. There was just a expose of a chicken company that had the standards, but wasn't adhering to them whatsoever. So really you need to work with companies that are going into the farms and making sure that they're doing the right thing, or working with farms that you know. Totally agree with that. So we started with a pasture-raised program on our chickens, but unfortunately our customer, the majority of our customers didn't want pasture-raised. And so we moved to organic and free-range organic, and then tried to find the best possible chickens we could find. So organic plus, as I like to call it, but companies that are going above and beyond an organic certification. When something is certified organic, it does mean that it's it was fed organic grain. So that means that GMOs are out. Unfortunately, it also means that they're importing the grain, which is kind of crazy. But you know, there's not enough non-GMO grain in this country, so yeah, they're importing it. And then there's processing, and chicken is, there's density issues. You want to make sure that your chickens can live live life the way that nature intended. The pasture-raised chicken, so like I said, our customer didn't really like that as the standard chicken in our box, because pasture-raised is just a very different chicken. It's got smaller breasts. It's got tougher legs. It's just a different eating experience. We are looking into a few things on the chicken front. One is working with companies that are doing even more, pushing the envelope even further on the organic side. We're also looking at pasture-raised chickens that taste more like what people are used to, because there are some people doing some interesting stuff there. There's also a whole conversation afoot on genetics of chickens. So basically the chickens that are being raised now it's not really a humane breed. They grow too fast. They can't move around. It's, right. You know, the people's tastes for chicken has gotten to the point where the chicken can't really keep up. And, there's a lot of work right now to try to change that within the industry.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a, you know, this is a hard, like I said, the chicken seems to be the hardest. So a pasture raised chicken runs around eating bugs, and, you know, they're scrappers. You know, it will eat seeds that it finds, even
well, most people are not to cut you off, but most people are spraying their fields or putting corn in their fields or grains in their fields. Like very few people, unless you're buying from like a backyard farm, are just doing pasture raised with like nothing.
Yeah. So, okay. So talk about your chicken. I mean, you said you kind of have different grades of it. So explain to that. So if we're ordering it, because, you know, I really need to even get fussier about the chicken I'm eating.
Yeah. So, like I said, so our chicken is organic and free range. Free range means it has access to the outdoors. It can go anytime, but, you know, unfortunately most chickens like to cluster around their food. So really like what you're looking for are farms that are like innovating on ways that they can get the chickens outside, because for the most part, chickens like to just be right where their food is. Mm-hmm. Organic being, so there's a humane standard there, certified humane, as well as, you know, the feed it's getting is all organic. But, what we have found in the pasture world is, and we've done a few interesting, we've brought in pasture raised birds and sold them individually, and people like them as like a individual thing. But if people are really looking for that pasture raised chicken, currently, our chicken program is organic and free range rather than pastured. Mainly because what we found was people were like, "Oh, I tried the, you know, wow, these breasts are really small, or this leg is really tough," and it became people like the idea, but not necessarily like the what it tastes like.
Typical male, you know, it's about the breasts and about the legs. If
that's
we could
right.
just
change. You said it. I didn't want to go there, but yeah. Correct.
I'm a leg guy. Anyway, so yeah, the tough legs. I don't know. Anyway, so okay, one more question. I know Meredith has probably better questions. Is there pork? Is there safe pork? I mean, is there healthy pork?
I think there is. A few things have happened in pork. So first of all, pork is, in terms of humane treatment, is the most important one to get right. So pork, their brain, their emotions, the way that they work together, their pigs are very, very smart and emotional. And certainly in terms of the three species that we work with is like the number one that you have to get right on the humane side.
Yeah.
So certified humane is incredibly important, as is pasture raised. So pigs are social creatures. They like to be around each other, but giving them pasture to walk around in is incredibly important. So a lot of these concentrated feeding places are, you know, pig after pig, super small crates, can't turn around, you know, dock their tail, and it's just an awful environment. The thing that's happened with pigs is, so do you remember when it was pork, the other white meat?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, basically, it used to be that, pigs were fatty, and that fat is like really tasty and marbled. And then, for a few reasons, one being that lean meat is easier to like more rapidly put on a pig. The other being that the taste or the consumer started looking for less fat. So in the 80s, it was low fat was the thing.
Yeah.
So all the pigs, all the fat got bred out of them. So what you have now is like a really dry, lean pork chop rather than like the way that pork is supposed to taste, which is really fatty and marbled and delicious. We definitely hear, we work with a lot of doctors and bloggers, and we definitely hear some people say, you know, my audience, I tell them not to eat pork. But if you're going to eat pork, so I won't get into like pork or no pork. Obviously, you know, we offer pork, so that's how I feel about it. If you're going to eat pork, I think the pasture-raised nature, the humanely raised nature, or those things are incredibly important to keep in mind and to have be the most important thing.
You know, I mean, one of the arguments about pork is that, you know, they eat their own waste, but do they, if they're pasture raised versus in a corral, you know, kept all the time?
Yeah. So I traveled in college and spent a summer in Ecuador on a farm, and I was the guy raised out of the pen, and they definitely do eat their waste when they're penned. All I can say is I've never seen it. I don't know. I'm not sure. I've been on a lot of pig farms. I've never seen a pasture raised pig behave in that way.
You know, I mean, I would argue this. Look, you know, cows are meant to only eat grass.
Yep.
When they eat other things of grass, it affects the meat in a negative way. It affects the human. It affects our cells. Chickens and pigs they're omnivores. They have the ability to eat multiple things.
Correct.
So I think starting there, a chicken can eat healthy grain. It can eat seeds. It can eat insects, right? So therefore, it's an omnivore.
Yep.
Pigs are the same way. Pigs can eat a lot of different things. They're omnivores. So arguably then, they're able to eat other things and still remain a healthy flesh, unlike a cow.
Right.
So let's kind of separate there. So then it becomes, okay, what are they eating? Because if a chicken or a pig is eating sprayed grain, that's bad. If it's eating GMOs, that's going to be a bad flesh. So, you know, they're meant to go around and eat a bunch of different things. So I think we can get away with a little more with those two animals. Am I right?
Yeah, totally. So, you know, the thing about the 100% grass-fed cow is their stomachs were designed to eat grass. So that's all they do. They just like sit and eat grass, and they can get all the nutrients that they need. They eat a lot of grass, but they can get all the nutrients they need from that. A pig can't really live on grass alone. It needs other stuff. So again, they're using you know, grains to feed the pig. Some places will do similar to what you were saying, where they eat, pigs were basically domesticated, and then they were always the ones that were really close to the village. And so they were the ones that ate trash or ate like scraps from the table, right, whereas the cows were out in the field. So if you go back 500 years, you know, it's fascinating. I mean, it's one of the reasons why pigs are so emotional and so intelligent, and their jaws look like humans, and their organs, like if you do in high school, you dissect like a pig because its organs look more like a human's. Right. And the theory is that a lot of that came about over years and years and years of having it be domesticated and close to humans. So it had to get smarter to like know what to eat and not eat. And but anyway, that's a huge digression from from where we were.
Well, yeah, send me some bacon. Is your pig, you know, you described the dry one. Is yours, you know, have you brought it back to the fattier meat?
Yeah, absolutely.
Everything is good. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right, Meredith, I've exhausted myself picking his brain.
Well, you guys have covered a lot of great questions, and I'm so glad you did the breakdown of the cow, the chicken, the pig, because there's so many variations within it. But what I was kind of thinking and curious about too, as we talked about this, kind of the details of that certified humane kind of that regulation, because I was thinking, you know, a lot of these animals in the feedlots, especially the cow, and I'm not sure if this has been measured, maybe one of you know, that you know, I'm sure that their cortisol levels are very high, yep, in those very stressful situations, which would, you know, of course, affect the animal's cellular health, the way that the meat tastes, the ability for it to nourish us. So do you know of studies of cortisol levels in, you know, grain-fed versus grass-fed animals, or, you know, unhealthy animals versus healthy animals?
I don't, unfortunately, but I do know. So, like I said before, we buy a lot of our meat in Australia. And one of the really cool things there is one of the tests that they do pH in all of the animals after they've been harvested. And we're only buying the top like 10% of the product. So the whole idea with pH is keeping the stress level down. So, you know, it's a, everything they're solving for, because the farmer actually makes more money, they get paid more for better rankings. So everything they're solving for is trying to reduce stress as much as possible. And that's everything from what their trip is like from the farm to the harvesting facility, how they were raised, how they were treated, you know, kind of giving them time to chill out. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, stress has a really bad impact on meat, that's not only is it bad for the animal, but it's also bad for the end product. I don't have any data on a feedlot versus a non-feedlot.
That was a great question, Merrick. Mm-hmm. You know, of course it would have.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I think of the quotation, which I think is so appropriate for this conversation, is you are, it's not you are what you eat, but you are what you eat eats, right? So when we really kind of think of that in terms of what we're putting into our body as far as where it came from and what that animal ingested, we need to be really, really mindful of that. And I found too, just now, I'd much rather prefer a vegetarian option versus an unhealthy animal option. I'd rather have just that salad without the meat versus a salad with an animal that's, you know, come from a feedlot, because I know that's going to do a lot more damage than just, you know, forgoing protein for a little while. So, so I think that's a really important thing to come into mind. And, I think this has been a great conversation too. You guys have covered so much. And Mike, I just wondering if you can share some of the details about how ButcherBox works. And, and then I want to offer, have a special offer that you've so generously made for our viewers and listeners.
Yeah, for sure. So, the way ButcherBox works is, what we want to do is replace the butcher. So we want to be your monthly meat source. So we have two options. One is, well, I guess we have more than two, but, you can get a box every month or every 2 months. And then you can choose sizes. There's a regular standard box, and then there's the double box, which is like for families. Not to over confuse things, but you can choose the curated box, where we go and do all the hard work to find all the cuts that we think will be the best for the month and give you recipes. Or you can get the custom box, where, you know, some people, we launched it recently, and really it was in response to people who live in the middle of nowhere, don't have another option, and want to make sure that they're getting exactly what they want to get. So that custom option, you get to choose exactly what you want in your box, and we ship it to you on a monthly basis. You go to our website, we have all the information about our animals, about the farms we work with, about our box, about our process, and it's fairly easy to sign up. I know you're going to give out some sort of coupon or a link to go to. And we are all about full service. So we're what we call member obsessed here. We're always worried about our individual subscribers and what their experience is, and are always looking for information and feedback so we can get better and better and just keep delivering an amazing product.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, love it. And before I mention the offer, I did have one more question. So when you said earlier in the show that a lot of people have eaten grass-fed beef and just found it to be very tough, and I know that's been my experience a little bit, depending on which kinds. I've had some incredible grass-fed beef and then some tough grass-fed beef as well, possibly from dairy cows, which I wouldn't have thought of. But I'm wondering if you have any hints or a good recipe to offer to make that meat really, really moist and juicy.
Yeah, for sure. So the most important thing on like cooking a steak side is just cooking it rarer than you normally would. So cooking going to like well done or something with grass fed is just not gonna do well. So we tell people to go to rare to medium rare in terms of cooking time. So if you get a ribeye in your box, 4 minutes on one side, 3 minutes on the other, done is plenty of time. I think one of the things that happens with people who are concerned or grass-fed beef that comes out tougher is people don't cook it for long enough. So I think that's for beef in general. But a lot of the cuts of beef are, you know, you put it in your Instant Pot for a few hours, or you put it in the crock pot all day, and it's just like, just keep cooking it because it breaks everything down. You're going to have a really, really amazing eating experience. My favorite recipe that we do short ribs every once in a while, beef short ribs. And you just get short ribs, salt, tomato paste, a little red wine, cook it, 4 or 5 hours, and you've got at like 225, and you've got like amazing, amazing short ribs. So, and I'm all about
that, sounds
like,
good.
The smallest amount of ingredients possible, just so you can taste the meat.
It's so true. Well, when you have an amazing product, you don't want to hide it. You just want to enhance it with some flavor, but really keep it simple. So
that's
it. Awesome. Well, great tips. All right, viewers and listeners, ButcherBox has an amazing offer for you. So if you go to butcherbox.com/Dr. Pompa, that's if you're listening, BUTCHERBOX.com/DRPOMP. And you're going to get $10 off your first order and 2 free grass-fed ribeye steaks. So wonderful offer. We're so excited to partner with you and help share your product. And thanks so much for what you're doing and for getting this amazing product out to so many people who wouldn't have access to it otherwise.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on, Mike. Appreciate it. Appreciate
you.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thanks everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Have a fantastic weekend and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.